Coming up on Tech Thing, iOS 9, multitasking on the iPad, and quite a bit more from Apple's WWDC, travel-friendly devices for file storage and sharing, thermal compound or thermal pads, help buying a new antenna, upgrading is future-proofing, and more. All coming up on Tech Thing. If you get something useful out of this episode of Tech Thing, please consider contributing to the show at patreon.com/techthing. We're brought to you by viewers just like you. Thank you so much.
I'm Shannon Morse.
And I'm Patrick Norton.
And this is Tech Thing, where we make technology behave.
At least on the good days.
You know what does behave most of the time?
Club Mate?
Not Club Mate. Oh my gosh, what did you do?
I don't know. It exploded. People were nearly injured like me. That's not a beer. It's a hacker beverage. It's from Europe. It's sophisticated.
It's €2. Like, so one thing that does behave generally are Apple devices. And it just turns out that Apple just had their Worldwide Developers Conference, which is basically where all their devs go to make new apps and learn about what's happening in Apple for the next year.
What a segue.
Thanks.
Apple Worldwide Developer Conference took place a couple days ago. iOS 9. Duh.
iOS 9,
yeah.
Which we will see later this year. Woo!
It's kind of funny. OS 10, 10.11, El Capitan, both of them, it's kind of funny. Some people are saying, Apple, of course, the epicenter of change,
yeah.
The epicenter of change. It's more like a lot of modest improvements that seem to be catching up with Android and other places.
I can appreciate that, though, because I like it when companies focus on what works as opposed to just creating a spew of new products that are going to break eventually.
Yeah.
So with iOS 9, they're going to be able to do side-by-side apps, which I'm sure Android
on iPads.
Yes, on iPads. So that's going to be like multitasking.
It's
pretty cool.
It's it's inconceivable. Security specifically, data's going to stay on the phone, not the servers.
Yeah, they really touted their security. They were like, listen, none of that is going to be uploaded to the server. Siri is going to work because all that data is on the phone. Watch OS, you're probably going to be excited about this.
More native applications, new faces. Not so excited about faces, but native applications on the phone, more developer options, which are a big deal. And it's funny about security because Apple Pay is launching in the UK, so their eventual worldwide conquest or battle with Android over control of your credit cards. That's just too odd to contemplate. But obviously, they want to seem as secure as possible.
Yeah. They better be. they're focusing a lot on Apple Pay. It's pretty cool that they're going to be able to integrate that as well. And there's new updates with Swift.
Swift.
So I like learning about programming languages. I thought this was pretty cool. Swift 2 is going to allow compatibility with other operating systems. So you won't be stuck in a Mac interface. You can use it on Linux as well to build your applications, which is great. And they're also open sourcing it. Yay!
It's kind of funny. As Microsoft and Apple are sort of starting to open source languages and make things more accessible, they're still continuing to keep things locked down in terms of the content.
They really have.
Public transit directions and Apple Pay locations are showing up in maps. Public transit's been way overdue for maps. HomeKit will be able to control much more, including security cams.
And there's one more thing, Apple Music.
Yeah.
So they're allowing a streaming radio service, basically. They're even including a new radio
channel. Is what Beats essentially turned into, morphed into.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's been funny because the news coverage on this has been this mix of like, we talked to Jimmy Iovine and he talked about the human touch and how necessary it is for programming. And on one hand, I tend to agree with that. But on the other hand, there's also been a lot of actions in the courts about whether or not Apple is been a little abusive in trying to force record labels to not give away free playlists on places like Spotify, who ironically just raised zillions of dollars in venture capital funding to help stay viable. $10 a month for the Apple Music. I'm curious to see how it works out.
I am too. I'm probably not going to use it because I'm already stuck in like Pandora and using Google Music, which is where I store all my personal stuff. I just have an iPad, so... But they are going to be releasing it on Android as well by the end of the year, too.
That should be
interesting. Yeah. Hey, moving on, we have a viewer question from Alan.
Alan writes in, hi, Shannon and Patrick. I'm kind of past where I roll my own hardware to the point where I would prefer not to even have to replace an internal hard drive. In spite of that, I found your Q&A session on your gaming rig really fascinating and informative. Thank you. I'm not sure if this was a conscious decision, but I found it insightful that the answer to the future-proofing question was upgrade. It makes complete sense that if you're willing to build your own PC, that upgrading when you need it makes more sense than future-proofing, both in terms of cost and performance. I never really thought of it that way before. On the other hand, now that I'm avoiding the hassle of hardware, I'm more interested in future-proofing, unless the only hardware involved is plugging in a USB cable. Thanks for another interesting episode of a great show, Alan.
Yay!
First of all, Alan, thank you. That was a really nice letter. Here's the thing. With certain devices, you can't really upgrade them. Smartphones. Okay, you can put an SD card in your smartphone. I can upgrade the operating system on an iPhone. Laptops, okay, you might be able to add some more memory in your laptop.
You might be able to replace it with a solid state drive as well.
Or make a larger solid state drive as prices drop down.
Yeah.
With desktops, you have a huge amount of flexibility. And you know, what is for me, like I look at like a $1,000 GPU 6 months ago is suddenly a $600 GPU today and a $300 GPU in 6 months or a year. So at some level, buy what you need and then upgrade works really, really well. You know, it's hard if, okay, so if you want to do gaming on a 4K monitor and you need terabytes of storage and you want all the storage to be SSDs, yes, you're cutting a huge check. But most of us can make some compromises or wait.
I will wait.
Well, it's kind of funny. Like I built a series of $500 gaming PCs and I typically got 2 to 3 years out of that. But but at the end of 2 to 3 years, I almost invariably had added more memory, moved to a larger hard drive and upgraded the GPU. But that ended up still being less than the cost of a $1,000 PC, and in many cases performed better than that original $1,000 PC would have by the end of the upgrade cycle.
That's pretty much the same math that I come up with every time I build a new computer.
You know, if you have the money, spend it. But it's, you know, it's you know, if you're buying a laptop, buy all the processor you need, right? Because you're not going to upgrade the processor on that laptop. And please don't tell me how this one company somewhere has upgradable GPUs, because the upgradable GPUs in laptops never work the way you want them to. Mostly due to a profound lack of support by GPU makers, but that just brings us to Carl.
Yes, so Carl wrote, "Hello, first off, I love the show and just binge watch all of Tech Thing over the past 2 days. Wow, that's a lot. Thanks for an awesome show to replace Techzilla. I ran across an older netbook that I had, an Acer Aspire 1 model ZG5 that had been stored away for a while that still had Windows XP running on it. I tried Windows 7, which seemed to run all right, and then I tried Ubuntu 14.10 on it, which ran about as good as Windows 7, but was a bit sluggish as well. I then, of course, tried a couple of Linux options, but I'm wondering if there is anything else that I can really do with this little thing, or any other older computer hardware that I have laying around that just seems to have been left behind with XP. Is it possible that Windows 10 might be able to resurrect these older machines? It only has an Intel Atom 1.6 gigahertz processor and 1 gig of RAM on the board with an extra slot that will handle another 512 megs of RAM. Woo-hoo! It also has a 160 gig hard drive, but not a great onboard video processor. It does playback videos fine if they are moved over to the disk, but YouTube and Netflix playback is choppy. Thanks for any info and for making a great show from Carl." Thank you, Carl.
Yeah. So it's so funny.
Good question.
It's a great question, right? Yeah. And one of the things that was really interesting is a lot of people with netbooks that had kind of been like, it's a paperweight, loaded Windows 8 on them and found because of radical changes in the way Windows 8 addresses memory and sort of uses memory, Windows 8 actually performed really, 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 really well.
Yeah.
With little tiny amounts of memory, much better than Windows 7 did. In theory, Windows 10 promises kind of the same thing, because these are the minimum system requirements for Windows 10. You know, a gigahertz or faster processor, a gigabyte of RAM, 16 gigs of hard drive space. These are obviously the bare minimum. It really helps. It's kind of funny. A lot of netbooks got revived with Windows 8. It really helps if you go into performance options and select adjust for best performance, not adjust for best appearance in terms of graphics. That'll take a big load off of that minuscule little GPU in your machine. Turn off any processes you don't need at startup. It's kind of funny. Like I laugh because I went to do it in this machine because normally it's Windows plus R. I'm going to say normally and then type in msconfig. Windows plus R, msconfig. And I went to adjust startup. And of course, in Windows 10, it's like, oh, Task Manager. Okay, so Control Alt Delete. So we'll Control Alt Delete, go into Task Manager. And this is one of the things that's actually pretty cool. So if you haven't been in the Task Manager in Windows 10, go to More Details. And Performance is over here. That gives you an idea of obviously of everything that's running in your system. But there's a whole.
There's another startup menu right there.
And that's a first.
And then it freezes.
And then I crash tax. Okay, so here's, but you could look at all of these things that are running in here and decide, well, in terms of your netbook, you pretty much want to uninstall all of them. or at least turn them off at startup. There are Windows things you don't want to turn off. Don't go willy-nilly just, you know, unchecking different processes. But understand that on that CPU, on those little tiny, like, you know, single dual-core CPUs, multitasking sucks. So don't run more than one app at a time. Defrag that hard disk drive. I use Iobit Smart Defrag on all of my regular hard drives.
Defrag is awesome.
Yeah, and it's free, which is really, really cool. And they've got really shiny graphics on their webpage, which is kind of awesome.
Should probably mention, don't defrag solid state drives.
Don't.
You don't need to.
No. In fact, you'll do damage. Just don't. You won't.
Just don't touch it.
I don't want to talk about it right now. I wouldn't bother with a half gigabyte memory upgrade, unless it's cheap or will actually offload the GPU memory from the CPU memory. I would upgrade to a cheap SSD if possible. If it has a standard hard drive inside of it, an SSD will be a ridiculous improvement. All that said, a lot of older laptops and desktops are missing drivers for Windows 8 and Windows 10. Start with your manufacturer, then work to the manufacturer of the components inside the laptop or desktop. Audio support has driven some folks mad with Windows 10, but Microsoft keeps adding more drivers as they get closer and closer to that July 29th release date.
Yeah, that was a great roundup. Yeah,
thank you.
I think you're exactly correct.
It goes back to, you know, part of future-proofing is maximizing what you can do with the hardware you have.
If you haven't tried Linux Mint, that's the one I've been running on my old netbook, and I've made it last for like 6 years. It's very old, but it works, and it works great because it's such a low-powered operating system. So it might be something you want to consider.
I was trying to pull up. We got an email from a viewer that gave us a heads up. Linux Mint is doing like a $600 dedicated Linux Mint machine.
Whoa!
And of course, the internet has decided to mock me today. All right, let's just toss it to Darren and find out what's coming up on Hack 5 this week.
What happens when you merge open source hardware and radioactivity? Well, you get Geiger counters, and Shannon is going to show you just that. And I got a fun little systems administration tool that'll make your Linux days all that much brighter. You can find out more this week on Hack 5.
I mentioned the Linux Mint box at Adamzilla. Which should be easy enough to say that. We got a tweet from Adamzilla who says, have you guys seen the Mint box? I smell a new review for the show. We'll have to see if we can do this. It's a collaboration between the Mint Linux crew and CompuLab, and it's pretty interesting. They've got the standard and the pro version. The pro version is ribbed for heat dispersion. Yeah, I knew you would laugh.
It looks like a router.
It does look like a router, and I suspect it could actually do some routery kind of stuff, because when you look at the back, well, one of them I saw, I swear, had dual Ethernet ports, which could also be some sign of me slipping. But it's like around $500 they're running a APU-G T40N, 4 gigs of RAM, 8 gigs, and a GT56N APU on the expensive version.
That's cool.
It's pretty cool. It's I don't know if I'm ready to spend $500 for a little tiny PC, but it's tempting.
I like building them.
You like big PCs with lots of expansion.
Uh-huh.
This week's Rapid Fire Roundup is all about summer travel. Ms. Shannon's got three travel-friendly products for sharing data and backing up across devices. Are you ready?
Ready!
Go!
The first one is the SanDisk iXpand Flash Drive, or I should say SanDisk, not SanDesk. It's 64 gigs, $99.99, and you can also get 128 gigs for $149.99. It basically just expands the storage of your iOS device, and it lets you play back all sorts of video, music, and video files. The nice thing about this is it comes with a little lightning adapter. You plug that into the bottom, you can save files onto it, and then you can use the nice little USB flash drive. It's only USB 2.0 though, and you can plug it into your computer and transfer files if you need to. It's very small and compact, really easy to travel with. So unfortunately, on the con side though, it is FAT32 and USB 2.0. It's a little bit slower for file transfers over USB, and it also limits you to 4 gigs of file size because FAT32. So that can be an issue if you want to play really, really big video files. It does have a free app in the App Store for iOS only, obviously, since it's a lightning adapter. It can also secure your device, though, with a password. So if you end up losing this and you need to log into it, you can use a password on it so nobody else can gain access to it.
To your Beats selfies.
To your Beats selfies.
To your cat pictures.
And it lasts several days. It has an internal battery, so it doesn't
take
up your iPad's battery. And it lasts for a really long time. I haven't had to charge it up yet. It automatically charges when you plug it into your computer.
Who knew?
Pretty cool. Next up is the SanDisk Wireless Media Drive. This one looks like a little puck that you could play hockey with.
Okay.
But not really.
We call those hockey pucks often.
So yeah, it's very, very small and compact. I really like the style. It's got a nice rubber bottom so it doesn't slip around. It's 32 gigs storage inside of here for $69.99. There's also a 64 gig version for $110. Has a micro USB port on the back so that you can plug it in and recharge it. So basically, this is for storage and sharing of your mobile devices. So you can store any files of pretty much any size right. that you want to. You can use a little, where is it?
It's a little wireless file server,
there
basically.
It is. Yeah, so you also have an SD card slot included, and you can share to popular operating systems via a password-protected Wi-Fi, which is built into this.
Nice.
So it's really, really great for like photographers with a non-connected camera if you mm-hmm. want to share your video files while you're on vacation and you don't have access to the internets. You can share up to 8 devices at once with 802.11n Wi-Fi.
Yay. Come on, everybody. Log in and see the pictures on my
everybody,
phone.
Let's have a party. And it's also USB 2.0, unfortunately, but it does have 8 hours of use. I can't imagine that you would use all 8 hours at once, so this would be really nice to have.
Well, if you're streaming video on a plane or something.
That's true, yeah. So that would be 8 hours for those 8 computers. And it's also iOS and Android too, so it's not just iOS, which is really, really handy.
Yay!
And number 3 is the Kingston 5-in-1 Mobile Companion. So this is $29.99 without an SD card. I do want to mention they also sell one with an SD card. It's crazy expensive, so just buy it without one, because it'll save you money. Doesn't have internal storage on this, but it's basically used for sharing files via Wi-Fi or storing up to 2 terabytes of data via the USB port and the SD card port. So you can put USB flash drives in it or mm-hmm. SD cards from your camera, for example.
That's cool.
It also works as a battery. So it has a 4640 milliamp per hour battery inside of it, so mm-hmm. you can probably charge your phone like twice, and 13 hours of battery life. So definitely a lot of battery life whenever you want to use it and share out your files and videos.
Is it a router too? I notice it has an Ethernet jack.
So with that a good example would be mm-hmm. like if you go to a hotel and they don't have Wi-Fi available, but they have Ethernet in the hotel room.
Got it.
You can plug your Ethernet in there and use it as a Wi-Fi access point.
That's
pretty cool. Also USB 2.0, but it can share to 5 devices at once, and it's also WPA2 protected for your passwords.
How much?
That one is $29.99 without an SD card. And if you buy it on Amazon with an SD card, and I don't remember the size of the SD card, but it's more than $50.
So basically buy an SD card.
Yeah, buy it separately. iOS and Android for that one as well. So there are tons of different products available if you have the need. If you have like an iPad that doesn't mm-hmm. have additional storage available
right.
for it, you can totally buy one of these things, have that additional storage, and also be able to share out to your entire family when you're on a road trip. Really cool.
Just want USB 3.0.
I do
just
too. Want.
Well, the family thing's really cool though, because if you've ever yes. been like to a family reunion and had 17 people taking pictures,
absolutely.
There's that moment of reconciling everything. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I put my photos on Flickr, I put my photos on Facebook, I put my photos
yeah.
on Instagram. And
chasing everybody down is a real pain in the butt.
It's nicer to actually have somebody sync all that and then mm-hmm. make them all available later on. Something to think about.
Yes. So what are your picks? Of course, I want to know what you've been traveling with. You can tweet at TechThing. I'm going on a vacation, so I need to know what the best device is for my iPad and for my Android phone. Let
me
know.
You're leaving tomorrow, so tweet
let me know right now.
It's time for our host, Gator Disruptive Tech of the Week. I'm going to talk to you about a little different take on headphones this week. Something I think about a lot because I got a couple of kids. These are Sennheiser's Momentum headphones, the over-the-ear version. These are fantastic. The sound and imaging are amazing. They look good. They're extremely comfortable. And they have an SPL of 110 decibels. SPL, essentially, is a sound pressure level. These are fairly efficient headphones. Not to get too geeky, but a milliwatt of power applied to these cans will deliver 110 decibels of audio. Apply more power to them, they'll go louder. Why do you care? Well, 30 minutes at 110 decibels will cause permanent damage to your hearing.
Mm.
Right? Maybe not something you're, you know.
I don't want to do that.
Well, it's kind of crazy, right? But up the level to 115 decibels, you've got 15 minutes before you start doing permanent damage to your ears, right? So you know the idea of there's an ear, there's an ear canal. At the end of the ear canal is an eardrum. Inside the eardrum is this sort of thing, the cochlea, that's filled with little hairs that essentially pick up the vibrations that are transmitted to your eardrum through the air, right? Not me. I'm not that good. But the idea, though, is like one big loud noise. Say somebody shoots a gun right next to your ear, or
right.
you know, you're in Afghanistan and an IED blows off. One big loud noise can do permanent damage to your hearing that you notice immediately, or literally blow your eardrum out. That said, more and more people are damaging their hearing over time by listening to stuff too loud. Mm. It's pretty crazy. If you start doing like a search on Google for hearing damage charts, there are hundreds of examples.
Oh, wow.
it's an area that's becoming a really big concern. The one I'm looking at right here, I particularly like the fact that up around 150 dB, it calls it intolerable. I cannot explain to you how loud 150 dB is, except to say that it's pretty much louder than a jet airplane engine unless you're stuffed inside of it. So you might be smart about protecting your hearings, but a real question is are your friends or are your kids? I'm not talking about chainsaws or power tools or at the gun range, all stuff that when I was young in the 70s, people did without hearing protection. Most people have gotten smart about wearing ear protection on the job site or running chainsaws and stuff like that. But music on headphones, most folks, especially teens, just blast it. Turn it up to 11, and if it goes to 12, go there. The problem is that the damage is accumulative. It happens over time. First, maybe it's like, okay, I was listening to that song really loud, and I heard ringing for a couple days. Later on, you start to have difficulty in hearing. You start losing whole chunks of bandwidth. Doesn't he play a cymbal in this song? Or being able to hold a conversation with someone will become next to impossible if you aren't actually reading their lips. It is a major problem with young people that live on earbuds and headphones constantly. I've seen estimates from one in every five or six teens that already have permanent damage. What we're looking at here is this really crazy article from the World Health Organization, The Who. 1.1 billion people at risk of hearing loss due to unsafe uses of personal audio devices, including smartphones, and exposure to damaging levels of sound at noisy entertainment venues such as nightclubs, bars, and sporting events. Sounds crazy, right? This kind of damage is totally preventable. As a matter of fact, part of the reason I still have hearing today is because some friends of mine in a band grabbed me and my buddy Jeff and said, "We're going to have the bouncers throw you out of every show if you aren't wearing earplugs, period." And Jeff
That's
and
kind
I
of awesome.
Looked at each other and we went, "Okay, we'll wear earplugs." The damage is preventable if you can keep the volume down. 85 decibels, you can listen it to 8 hours. That's fairly safe. I have noticed I have to closely monitor my 7-year-old when he's using headphones because he's always turning it up. He's very rock and roll that way. That's the idea behind these headphones. Puro Sound Lab sent these to me to take a look at. These are the Kids BT2200. They're basically children-sized headphones. They're Bluetooth, and they're limited to 85 decibels. The sound, they're really good, actually. The sound is much better than I expected. And you can't turn them up over 85 dB. Yeah, you need a USB cable to charge them, but you can actually use them if the battery runs out, and they give you a special cable to use with them that actually, if I find the right cable, will actually limit, it actually has the ability to limit or sort of cut off, attenuates the word I'm looking for, the levels.
And it's built into the cable.
Yeah, it's built into the cable. You got to plug the cable in the right way, and the volume's going to vary with the strength of the output amp. So if you plug it into a really powerful amp, it's going to be louder. But it's something to really think about. The shot I'm looking at right here, these are V-Moda's faders. If I get the right picture, you'll actually see what I'm looking at. These are earplugs. V-Moda makes some unbelievably fantastic headphones. The crossfades are some of the best all-around headphones I've ever listened to. For $20, the V-Moda Faders VIP are earplugs that'll do a flat 12 dB cut in levels, which means you can listen at the club or the concert longer without damaging your ears. They are less expensive than custom ear molds. They are so much, 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 much better audio experience-wise than cheap foam plugs. These are just two smart products that will help protect your hearing. There's room for so many more out there. I want you to think about your hearing. I want you to turn the volume down when you're listening to music. Keep an eye on your kids. And please, be smart now about your hearing so you'll have it later. Preaching over, do us a favor. If you need a web host, if you're starting a new business online, or if you're just looking for a better place to host a website, you have 1.1 billion people.
What?
That's a lot of hearing aids and people that'll need lessons on reading lips.
The Earth is not big enough for that many people.
The Earth has a lot more than that. Please consider our sponsor, HostGator.com. And if you use the coupon code TechZilla, you're going to score TechZilla. I don't work on that show anymore. If you use the coupon code TechThing, you're much more likely to get 30% off any new hosting package. You'll help keep the show going, and they'll take care of your website. And please, take care of your ears. Mm-hmm. Please.
Hey, we also got a question from Crispin writes in, I am planning on canceling our DirecTV subscription in August. We can now get HBO without a cable or satellite TV provider subscription. Also, ESPN is available on Sling.com. Woohoo! CBS is also available for over-the-internet subscription. However, I will need over-the-air reception in order to watch my Seahawks when they are on NBC or Fox. I live outside a rural town in Oregon. I need to invest in a good antenna. Does anyone have any recommendations? I found this site at homeantenna.org, but I'm still not sure. From Crispin.
So, homeantenna.org looks like a wonderful website. It's a, you know, they're selling stuff, so I don't know why they're a .org, but that's maybe that was the only one that was left. In any case, before you spend any money on an antenna, I want you to do what Robert Herron taught me to do, which is go to a place called TVFool.com. And they have, like, check your address for free TV, see which TV stations you can get on a map. And this is really cool because, so this is Alameda, California. This is where I live. And what they're showing me is the location. These green spots are a whole bunch of television antennas. Mm-hmm. And everything in here in green, I can use an inexpensive, you know, in-the-house antenna. As you get down into these red areas, you need to get it high up off the ground, like a rooftop antenna. And these are probably antennas, the gray ones, antennas, stations that you're not going to get.
Yeah.
So if we click over here, this is a rural town in Oregon that I'm familiar with, Lakeview, Oregon. It's all the way in the southeast corner of Oregon. And there's two or three antennas that are pretty much in town. These are these, you know, it's cool. This is a Google Maps overlay, and it gives you all this detailed information on the height of things. Because if you'll notice here, this LOS means line of sight. Television works a lot better when there aren't big mountains between you and the television antenna. And if I click here, this might be the affiliate that has your games on it. You will notice that it goes from being like on the other side of the hill to this is Lakeview.
Wow.
And this is the location of that affiliate. Now, this is a big flat lake, and there's a whole bunch of hills down here. So what you'll notice, though, is that the antenna height will have a dramatic impact. Let's say I've got a big old barn in the back 40 that I can put an antenna on, and that's going to impact sort of the quality of some of these signals. Not much for that distant antenna, but you get the idea that at some point an antenna is going to be far enough away that the curve of the earth will be between you and the antenna. Don't start emailing me with telling me how I have this wrong. I got it. But generally speaking, go to TVFool.com, look up what you need. For anything that's in the green area, something like this, the Waltenna, it's $35. Robert Herron loves this one. Another really good one is the Mohu Leaf. It sells for about $40 on Amazon.com. For the vast majority of us in suburban or urban areas, a $40 antenna that will hide behind a picture or behind your television cabinet is going to get all the digital channels. As you get out farther and farther into the hinterlands, the more you want to have a big old tower or a roof mounted. And the other thing that's funny, if you have a VHF antenna on your roof or UHF antenna on your roof, you may already be able to get these signals. Mm-hmm. UHF, generally speaking.
We discussed a lot about how to build your own antennas as well on Hack 5, so if you don't want to spend as much money, you can watch that and learn about the mathematical equations that go into different frequencies, including television channels, and you can figure out what length of an antenna you would have to post and how high it would have to be.
Yeah.
Really, really confusing stuff, but it works.
Well, I was just having a moment where I was like, are more digital channels UHF or VHF? But I'm pretty sure they're UHF. But in any case,
I don't remember.
Go to a website like TVFool.com. Look up to see whether or not it's actually a remote possibility to get that antenna in before you drop $100 on an antenna and then crawl up onto your roof and figure out how to, you know, tie it to the chimney or to, you know, something in the back. But generally speaking, though, once you get out of range, the higher, the better.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a fan of Tech Thing, make sure you subscribe to techthing.com on iTunes or youtube.com/techthing. You will get each and every episode that we make. And if you want to take it to the next level, consider contributing to the show at patreon.com/techthing. Each and every penny you donate, every little bit, it counts to help keeping us fed and the show going. If you can't donate, no worries. Please take the time to send us questions, tips, and to share the show with your friends and family. A thumbs up on YouTube, liking our Facebook page, all helps. iTunes reviews are really cool. Thank you so much for supporting the show. We appreciate it no matter how you do it. Nick writes in, hey Patrick and Shannon, I'm just wondering, for someone like me that's always been afraid to apply thermal compound, what do you think of thermal pads? I haven't built a PC in about 10 years, but I remember my CPU coolers would always come with a thermal pad attached, which I would use. I bought an Alienware X5 earlier this year, as I both didn't want to build from scratch and did want to take advantage of Alienware's much lower price compared to buying the same components individually. Aussie retail is odd. Alienware allows users to upgrade their systems, so a quieter CPU cooler is on my list of things to look into. Nick. Good question.
I haven't actually used a thermal pad in like 2 decades.
Well, it's funny. The stock coolers that come with, like, you know, most of the Intel processors that I bought that came with a stock cooler, you pulled a little tab off, there was stuff there, and you press it down.
And you just stick it on.
Well, it says a lot, right? If you go into the Amazon.com, you notice like 2.5 stars out of 5 is generally people not really liking these thermal pads.
Right. So there are pros of using a thermal pad. Mm-hmm. It's not as messy as the thermal compound will be. I mean, we have compound on our table now because of him. And it's a lot easier to install. So if you're just going to install something once, then it's an easy solution. But on the con side, though, it is only a one-time use.
Right.
And I don't know.
Well,
how often do you pull your
CPU cooler off?
Well, I don't. But if I had to, because I like to upgrade.
Right.
I just like to do that. But if I had to, I would prefer to be able to do that instead of having to like tear off the CPU with it.
Well, I don't know if it's going to tear off the CPU. But
generally
speaking, thermal compound is not as scary as you think it are. And if you're worried about it, we still want you to use thermal compound. But there are some people that seem to like, well, you know, these are mostly
people
for
people still
like,
use pads.
Yeah, but mostly for like north bridges or minor components on the motherboard. I.
If you are going to use one, just make sure that you're not stacking several so you don't try to like lay them on top of each other. And don't use it with compound, because if you do that, it can totally screw up the heating.
Do not insulate the processor from the cooler. That's bad.
Yeah, you need some heat to go between them. It's a heat sink.
Conducting, yes. Tom writes in, I'm new to Android phones and was wondering if there's anything I can do to control or clean the internal storage. I keep getting out of space notices and then I find that Facebook is hogging up most of the space. I moved all the apps I can to SD and I was wondering if there's a way to make my Facebook go to my SD card. Thanks for any assistance in this matter. Keep up the great work. Lost space in space.
Aw, he's totally lost in space.
Hate that.
Well, so it's kind of interesting. Facebook actually has a FAQ about this because this is a problem with the Facebook app.
Right.
I deleted it completely off my phone, and I got to say, I saved so much time. So if you can delete it, just delete it.
Tinfoil for Facebook is a nice Android application.
Tinfoil. So basically, to move Facebook, if it's not a pre-installed app, you can just tap on Facebook and then tap move to SD card. That would be within your Android settings. This is only available for Gingerbread though, so if you have Gingerbread or higher. And also it won't work if Facebook came pre-installed. So for example, on my Note 4, it came pre-installed. So I had to completely uninstall it. I wouldn't even have the option to move it to an SD card, which is kind of janky. I won't lie. I don't like that. You can also do a little bit of rooting if you're into that. It is a little bit more complicated, but it uses the Android SDK. Hold on, let me look it up. ADP. I think that's what it's called.
ADP SDK.
Yes, ADT API Bundle U. SDK Platform Tools. So this is the official Android SDK. It basically lets you enable all of your different applications to automatically move over to your SD card with rooting. Now, if you want to be able to do that without rooting your device, you do have the option. You can move Android apps to your SD card as well, but you would most likely have to do it manually. You can go to your settings, choose your application, and then choose move to SD card. So it does make it a little bit more complicated, but you do have the options.
We were talking about future-proofing versus upgrades. Buy the most memory in a phone you can afford.
Yes.
Because you may think 16 gigabytes sounds like a lot because your old phone was 8 gigabytes, but applications keep getting bigger. So if you can afford a 64 gigabyte phone, it might be worth it, especially if you use a lot of photos. And I will say tinfoil for Facebook. It's essentially a wrapper for the website.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not going to install it, though, because I wasted way too much time on Facebook.
Well, there you have it. Just walk away from Facebook. And remember, once in a while, put down the phone, step away from the screen, close the laptop, and do something analog.
Boom.
Like go to a baseball game.
Dude.
Especially a minor league baseball game.
Dude.
Or a high school baseball game.
I watched a baseball game last night at the bar with my friends, and it was so much fun. Everybody was freaking out.
Go to the bar.
Go Cavs. Go Golden State. What are they called?
That's
Warriors?
A basketball game.
Oh, whatever. That's close.
I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Shannon Morse.
Sports ball.
Sports ball. We'll see you next week on Tech Thing. Bye.
'Basketball?
Well, whatever. I wasn't
watching. I knew it was basketball is shocking. But I also live like 2 miles from the Warriors Stadium, so I see the big logos all the time.
That would make sense then.
'When Club Mate attacks. I'm sorry, I just had a
Club Mate all over his
head. It exploded. I tipped it back and it exploded. You know, I'll never forget my dad plugging in his headphones into his Walkman and going, "Hey, son, can you get me a soda out of the fridge? I'm waiting for one of my children."
You know what I would do? My dad would be chilling in the living room, like laying on the couch, listening to most likely Smashing Pumpkins or Pink Floyd. And I would walk in there, and he didn't realize that the headphones were in, but it was also playing out of the speakers, and it was turned up so loud.
So loud.
So loud. Like the neighbors could hear the words. It was really bad. Yeah. So I'd walk in there and just be like, "Dad, seriously?"
See, this is what friends and family, monitor your listening habits.
Yeah.
We're going to have a whole bunch of people in the elevator in 20 years from now going, "Hey, can you press 3?
I'm sorry.
Did you grow up with an iPhone? A lot of headphone usage? Android?
I'm sorry for your ears.
Big Metallica fan? You laugh.
I can't hear very well.
What?